And that is where I think that clergy and bishops need to get down and just be real and let people say what's really on their hearts and then help them get through it, because otherwise we're all lost. Everybody's lost. And so you as individuals not only are you know, likely going through struggles like I've talked about, but or you know somebody else in your parishes or your family. But when we start realizing that we're all in this together, and the trouble with, I think, a lot of clergy is that they're so convinced that if they reveal their own weakness to their people, they'll lose credibility. But I think most people already see the weaknesses in their priests. And it would be refreshing if the priest humbled himself and said, you know, I don't have all the answers, but we're all on a journey together. Let's help each other through this. That, I think, is really important. And I think that that's one of the reasons why so many people seek out monks and nuns, is because, you know, let's face it, you know, that most of us monastics are in need of the emergency room, you know, or maybe we could even say
I see you.
Yes. Or what's the other one? The mental place.
The other one.
Yeah. Yeah. So we are in dire need of mental health aid, but we enter a monastery because, in truth, because we recognize our failings and we want to make a difference in the world and we want to be closer to God, and we know that we probably would be endangering our soul if we were out there. And yet, I tell people that are interested in monasticism that if you don't like out there and you don't like, if you can't operate out there and you can't keep a job out there and you can't get along with people out there, don't come to a monastery, because a monastery is a microcosm of that, of the world. So I'm going to open it up to some questions now, so we don't just hear Father Trifon rambling. Yes? Why don't you stand up so we can hear you?
This morning you mentioned a couple of statistics about your island, Vashon Island, being, correct me if I get these misconstrued, but your island having the highest concentration of liberal democratic contributors to the liberal democratic causes there, and then, you know, a short ferry right away is Seattle with the highest, I guess, concentration of professed atheists in the world. So I guess my question is how has the community on Vashon Island received your monastery, and how do you interact with the community? Is it cordial? Is it hostile? Is it a little of both?
The island community has been absolutely incredible towards us. I'll give you an example. Many years ago, a young woman who was entering a Serbian monastery to be tonsured after her novitiate, and she was told by the abbess that she had to get rid of all of her material goods. And she was an heiress. And among other things, she owned a condominium in Linden, Washington. And so their confessor of the monastery had visited us. So he suggested, well, I know a monastery in Washington State that would be a great beneficiary of your generosity. So we received this condominium. It was empty. And initially I thought, well, we'll keep it for a month or so we can go up and get a little R&R. But we got up there, and Linden, Washington is a Dutch town. So when you're driving down the main street, every single yard is immaculate. Every blade of grass has been clipped. And you come across first... what's the name of it? Dutch Reformed Church, second Dutch Reformed Church, third Dutch Reformed Church. You look for a coffee house, good luck. You look for a bar, no way. Everything closes up at 5 p.m. You can't even get a decent meal there. It's all perfectly, you know, coffered. And I looked at Father Paul, and he looked at me, and I said, do we want to spend the night here? And we went to a real estate office, and we put it up for sale. And we sold it. So we used the money as a seed to begin the construction of the monastery. And we had already built our library, the building that's now our library, but we didn't have the skills to finish the interior with the sheetrock and all that. So somebody told us on the island, oh, I know the perfect guy, and so we hired this contractor. And he came and he said, okay, what are all these empty foundations over here? And I said, well, that's going to be the future bookstore and offices. This is going to be the trapeza. Those are going to be monastic cells. And he said, well, why don't I do all of them? And I said, we don't have the money for all of them. And he said, well, how much money do you have? And I told him, and he said, oh, I can do that. He says, I'll just go to big companies that are building whole neighborhoods of houses, and they always overstock so that they don't have a stop order, a stop work if they run, if they have like a door break or something like that. So I had to go to New York, and while I was gone, this guy came by and he asked Father Paul if we'd like to have hardwood floors in all the buildings, and Father Paul said, yeah. And he said, well, I've got a chance to buy hardwood flooring from a large contractor. He's got an overflow. So Father Paul wrote a check out. And then a few days later, he's back, and I go, I can get all the doors and windows you need. Wrote out a check. And he was going to store all of the stuff at his space in Seattle, West Seattle. And then on such and such a date, he was going to come, and he was going to start construction, bring all of his crew over, and finish the interior of the library, and then start construction on the other buildings. Well, the day came, and he's in a no-show. And I called his cell phone, and it answered and then clicked and never answered again. So I called the office. It was his ex-wife. What's he up to now? And so then we went by the address, and it was a house. And he was Southeast Asian. And we looked at the house, and all the people out in front of the house looked like they were a gang. We didn't dare go up to the door. And so I called one of our neighbors who was an FBI agent, and I told David about this. And I said, Father Paul remembers this car because he had this very high-end sports car. And Father Paul even remembered the license plate because he's good with numbers. And so David said, well, let me check on this. I'll get back to you. 15 minutes later, David called and he says, I've got good news and bad news. The good news is I was able to trace this car. The bad news is it's stolen. So about a month later, the man was apprehended and he went to jail. But not before he had stolen $57,000 of our money. And we never saw it again. And so I went to court when he was being sentenced, and I asked to speak. And I addressed him in open court, and I told him that the skills that he obviously has could be used for good. And I asked the judge to be lenient. He was going to get 7.5 years, and he got 3.5. And I hugged him, and we forgave him. Well, that ended up in the newspapers in Seattle. And the next thing, the following day, we had a big truck arrive. And Father Paul, I wasn't there, and Father Paul went out, and the guy said, don't I have insulation to be delivered here? And Father Paul said, well, we didn't order insulation. He said, well, it's paid for. So he left the insulation. And the following day, 16 people from our community came and spent the day putting up insulation. And the day after that, they were all... president of Rotary, the fire chief, his wife, a retired general that used to run the Pentagon during the Nixon administration, two colonels, one Army and one Air Force, retired. All these people showed up. And they did the insulation, and then a man who owns a construction company in Seattle was embarrassed that a contractor had done this, so he sent a crew over, and they did all the sheetrock and mudding in our library, free. And when they were all done, this colonel from the Air Force, or the Army, said, okay, what are all these empty foundations going to be? And I told him. He says, we got a lot of people that want to continue volunteering. So within the next year, all our buildings were built with volunteers. Not one of them Orthodox. In fact, not one of them a churchgoer. And they did it for us. And we had enough money to pay for the materials. We didn't have enough money to hire anybody. So all the... I'm going to pass this around so you can see what I'm talking about. But all the buildings here, with the exception of the church that had been built before that, were built by volunteers. And people are super sweet to us. A couple of us every Saturday go to our farmers market and just walk through and talk to people. And people want their pictures taken with us. People that never would step foot in a religious place bring relatives or out-of-town guests to see the monastery. So it's a miracle of what we've... And you know, what we see this as is our chance to plant seeds of faith. Because when we go into town, we also have a coffee company called Monastery Blend Coffee. We've won every blind taste test in Seattle. It's the best coffee you could imagine. And so we have hundreds of people on that island that will only drink our coffee. And when we go to town, we'll have people come up to us and say, oh, I love your coffee. It's the only coffee I'll drink. So we've had an odd interaction with the community that really surprised us. And we've only had a few converts over the years. It's not at all what I expected would happen. So it's been a wonderful place to be. Did that answer?
Well, I think as a follow-up, I think my own observation is that, you know, our culture is becoming increasingly hostile towards Christianity, and it's more or less attempting to drive us out of the public sphere, and yet you've had remarkable reception from your community there at Vashon Island in an area where people are very, very liberal and progressive. So it's truly sounds like a miracle.
But you know, it's not just Vashon Island either. For instance, I know, have any of you been to Seattle's Pike Place Market? Mm-hmm. And you know the guys that throw the fish?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I know. When we first moved to the area in 1988, the place was originally owned by a Greek Jew, and whenever he'd see us walk through there, he would Yasu, you know. And so I know them all, and I'm the only one probably that will routinely go there to buy with the tentacles.
Octopus.
Because we make a great Mount Athos octopus stew.
Mm.
So, I'll go there, and there's this rack of ice with the fish that are there, and the guy will somebody order fish, and he'll throw, you know, a salmon up over to the guy over there who catches it, and they wrap it up for you. And in between is a cash register, and I'll stand there and I'll order squid. So I'm the only one that has a squid thrown over my head. And I get hugs or high fives from these guys that do this place all the time.
Oh, nice.
There's one young man there who lost his grandfather that he was very close to, and his grandfather was a Portland or a Seattle police chaplain. So one day when he saw my badge, he says, "Wow, you're a chaplain." And I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, my grandfather is a retired police chaplain." And then a few months later, he told me, "Oh, my grandfather just died." And then he hugged me. Again, you know, it's like my friend Father Basil calls me the stand-up priest comedian. Mm-hmm. But I think that using humor with people helps break down those barriers of division. Mm-hmm. Because if I just walked in, you know, puffed up or even just kind of, you know, just quiet, you know, it's not me, it's my Big Al, my dad, you know, it's what I do. But I really feel that people are starving for God, but they don't know it